Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff, and I'm delighted to have you with us today. Today we're going to talk about a problem that people know very little about, which is amazing because it affects half the population. It always amazes me how little we know about women's health and how little our doctors know sometimes about women's health. So we have a very special guest with us today to talk about a new book that I really enjoyed, and I hope you will too. Before we get started, I wanted to remind you that this show is brought to you every week by the VHL Family Alliance. Von Hippel-Lindau disease is a hereditary kidney cancer and affects many organ systems. So this show is designed not just for people with VHL, but for all people with what we call complex medical conditions, things where you're dealing with more than one medical specialist, and also people with varying kinds of disabilities. But today's show will appeal, as I said, to half the population. So stay tuned. Let me share with you some information about VHL, and we'll be back in 1 minute to talk with our guest.
Von Hippel-Lindau disease, or VHL, is a genetic condition involving abnormal growth of tumors in some parts of the body. VHL occurs in every ethnic group worldwide. At this time, there's no cure, but research is helping those afflicted and their families learn how to manage their disease. When a family member has a tumor, it affects everyone in the family. VHL Alliance works to improve diagnosis, treatment, and the quality of life. Finding tumors early, getting the best treatment, and sharing information with others to help them cope is what VHL Alliance is all about. They're available to help lessen the stress of living with this lifetime chronic disease. Support the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance at VHL.org. That's Very Happy Life, VHL.org. 1-800-767-4-VHL.
Thanks for being with us. And at this point, I'd like to introduce our guest. We have with us today Dr. Lavera Miller. Welcome, Dr. Miller.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Thanks so much for being with us. So first, I want to thank you very much for your wonderful book. It's called Women of Pause, Feeling Fit, Feminine, and Fabulous in 4 Weeks. And I have to tell you, I learned more from your book about my own body and my own health than I have from any book since Our Bodies, Ourselves, I think, in the 1960s.
Well, thank you for that compliment. We've worked really hard at giving new ideas and new information that people just don't know.
They really don't. And, you know, I kept thinking, every woman over 40 should read this book.
Yes. You know, and 70% of people think that doctors would be too embarrassed to talk about these things in detail, and 75% of women think there's really no treatment anyway, and it's so not true.
Well, I'm certainly one of the ones who think that the majority of doctors are going to be too embarrassed or too unprepared to have this kind of discussion with people, and I've heard too many stories of women who have screwed up their courage to have that conversation with the doctor, and then they get told to buy a new hat or, you know, do something, you know, like that, that basically discounts all their complaints.
Actually, that was what my mother was told when she reached menopause. Go out and buy a new hat.
Right, and it's amazing because, you know, it does affect half the population, and I think one of the very interesting points that you made in the book is that this didn't used to be the same kind of a problem that it is today. Why? Because we didn't live that long.
That's right. We died before even perimenopause, a lot of us, and then now we're living twice that long.
So perimenopause is that period of the hot flashes and stuff when you're in the midst of the decrease in hormones that will lead to the point of menopause or the cessation of menses. Is that right?
Actually, that's very close, but perimenopause is actually sometimes the estrogen's too high and then it goes down too low. So you have swings, and so it's on that downward swing that brings the symptoms. And it usually starts about age 40, and for most of us, we hit menopause, that's when the last period is, at about age 51. And then the rest of it is called postmenopause, but we rename it the upside because post just doesn't sound like something good.
Right. So many of the terms that are applied to these cycles and the variations in the cycles are kind of clinical terms. And I think one of the things I really enjoyed about your book is that you try to take it away from being clinical and make it feel normal.
That's right, because it is normal.
So, for example, you lay out the woman's lifetime and the variations in hormones that go on in our lifetimes as if it were days in the week. So tell me how you came up with that analogy, that from Monday to Saturday, that there are natural, normal fluctuations that we all go through.
Well, because actually, clinically speaking, in medicine, they call it the seven stages. And I thought people don't relate to straw stages. That's not what we do every day. The days of the week, there's seven of them. And so I just made it into the days of the week because it's very understandable that way. And things happen Wednesday that are different from Thursday, different from Friday, different from Saturday. And it's an easy way to talk about it. And I just use the chart up in my office every day.
So for the seven stages, there's a day in the week that you lay it out against. And that's very interesting. And I remember this, I don't have it right in front of me, but there's a quote at one point in the book. It says it's not an abnormality, it's just the next day of the week.
Right, exactly. Just like graduation from high school. You're exactly right. It's very normal. And the first way that we actually know things are changing is usually with a change in the periods. It kind of is our signal. And they're just not as regular as they were, or they're longer, or they're just different in character and quality. And then the later stage of perimenopause, we actually start skipping periods, and then menopause is, of course, when it quits. But you can't define it until 1 year later. You have no periods for 1 year. Then you can say a year ago, aha, that was my celebration. That was my last period. And then you know you're in the postmenopause, which we call the upside again.
Right, because we don't know when it starts that it's going to be the last one. We only know that
right
back.
Exactly.
Right. It's like they used to, when I went to the doctor, they'd say, and when was the beginning of your last period? Well, unless you wrote it down, chances are you don't quite remember that.
That's right. Until they start changing, and then you start thinking, what's going on? Maybe I should chart this.
Right.
But then that's
right.
Also when mood swings begin, hot flashes, poor sleeping, memory loss, and vaginal dryness, which people don't realize to associate it with menopause most of the time. But it's also then when menopause hits, there's more serious things begin, which are dementia, heart disease, osteoporosis, vagina Sahara, diabetes, hypertension, those things. But there's safe, simple solutions.
And insomnia is another one that I didn't realize was connected with this. Tell us about insomnia.
Insomnia is very connected. About 70% of women at this time in life will notice the insomnia, and they a lot of times don't know to associate it with the hormone swings. It also happens coincidentally at the end of our cycle when we're doing the monthly cycles. We call it PMS, but we get insomnia with that too, and it begins in perimenopause to be all the time. And it's very treatable, but it is a real problem, and it's associated with and without hot flashes. But hot flashes make you wake up also, so it adds to it.
So the hot flashes are probably the most well-known symptom of this perimenopause period that you're talking about that usually goes from 40 to mid-50s, somewhere in there.
85%.
And yet, say that again.
I'm sorry, 85% of women experience hot flashes. That's why it's so well known.
Right, and, it's kind of dramatic. You'll be sitting with somebody and she starts fanning herself or, makes a comment about, woo, somebody opened a window. And so that's fairly public, and people crack jokes about it all the time. But it's not a joke. And as you say, there are ways of treating it that may even start with things like diet and exercise. So tell us a little bit about what to do or who to see and what kinds of tests to get in order to analyze what the situation is and how maybe it could be affected.
Well, it's not really a test. It is actually your symptoms. So when a woman comes in with these complaints, I actually give her the W score, which is a set of questions that all the things that are around the perimenopause time, you can answer those and tell whether you have or don't have. You can't flunk or pass. It's really just who you are. And how you use that test is a month later after you begin the diet, exercise, vitamins, etc. You retake the test and score so much better by the empowerment of knowing what to do. It's like the difference of maybe minus 50 in my patient to a minus 2 in 4 weeks.
So it's a way of quantifying how you're feeling on these various levels and then giving you a point of comparison for the next time. So it's a little bit like on a scale from 1 to 10, how much does it hurt? There's no, as you say, there's no right or wrong answer to that, but it just gives us a way of pinning it to the board, and then the next time I ask you that question, I can tell whether it's worse or better.
That's right. And so we start a diet program where we go through the ideas that you need to eat real food, quantity size to your fist, you know, really push the fruits and vegetables, things high in vitamin E, treat the symptoms, so, you know, kind of lean towards those foods. Also, we go through vitamins, like vitamin D that people don't really understand we're very deficient in. It actually decreases breast cancer by 280% in the last study. It also decreases heart disease, the hot flashes, vaginal infections also.
Right. Let's start with vitamin D then. Tell us a little more about vitamin D. I know it's getting a lot of noise in the press lately. That it used to be that we learned that too much vitamin D was actually a little bit toxic. Now we're realizing that a very significant part of the population is too low in vitamin D.
That's true, and I regularly test my patients yearly if they want to be, because it is such an important vitamin. And we call it a vitamin, but it's actually a hormone. It works in the body like a hormone. And you get it from the sun, and since we wear a lot of clothes and all of those sunscreens, we're not getting very much sun in the end. And we need to replace that either through a vitamin. Or you can actually take it in a pill or a spray under the tongue. And it will also, I didn't mention osteoporosis, it helps prevent osteoporosis too.
Right. So it's one of those things that we have to have in order to absorb calcium. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, they work together.
Right, and so there's a certain amount that's added to milk, for example, but we don't drink as much milk as we used to either.
No. In fact, we usually don't get enough calcium unless we take three 500 pills a day, where that means you take it morning, noon, and night. The more separated out, the better it's absorbed.
So I know there are some vitamins that you really don't store. You have to take more each day because they're water-soluble or something, and if you take too much, you'll just pee it out and you have to take more the next day. Is this in that category?
Yes, you have to be careful with calcium to take it. Well, it's just not absorbed well. If you take 1,000, it can only absorb so much at a time. So you want to take 500, it can absorb that well, and then take it again at noon and take it again at night. And if you do the calcium citrate, it's easier on the stomach. A lot of people have trouble with other calciums taking them with their tummies.
Right, and in order to really absorb the calcium into our bones, we have to have D, and we have to have a certain amount of the good kinds of oils too, right?
Yes, and also we need to exercise. Exercise is very important for the bones. It's also important in decreasing hot flashes. Exercise, of course, makes us look better. Exercise, it makes our heart better. It makes our mind better. In fact, it works better than Prozac for a mild depression. Exercise, you just can't put enough importance on it. You should aim for 7 days a week, and then hopefully you will get 5, and that would be great. And it needs to be at least 30 minutes a day. And if you start your morning with it, then you get a high from the endorphins that give you a high all day.
Right. So when we exercise, it actually helps our bodies produce a hormone that makes you feel better. This endorphins, as you mentioned, that are actually the good mood pills, if you will, that we make internally when we exercise.
Right. And if you exercise at least 3 times a week, it will decrease your chances of breast cancer by 50%. Another really cool rule about breast cancer is weight loss. If you lose 20 pounds if you're overweight, you also reduce your chances of breast cancer by 20%.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So vitamins are very important, and of course getting the right vitamins. How does one go about getting an analysis of what vitamins you might need? Because there don't seem to be easy ways to figure that out.
Right. It's better not to try to analyze it, but to take the safe tested doses that have been studied and work well in people without causing problems. The tests would be too expensive, and you'd be measuring it one time of the day or another, that it might not be true the other end of the day or other.
Uh-huh. So the levels will fluctuate even in the course of a day.
True. And
okay,
that's especially true with hormones.
So they say, for example, to analyze your saliva or to analyze your hair to try to figure out what vitamins you're short of, but you think it's much better to just take the safe doses, like multivitamins or something, rather than bothering to try to figure all that out?
Yes, and there are certain vitamins that I think are real important to take an extra dose besides your multivitamin, such as the vitamin D that we were talking about, to take 4,000 extra of that, and the calcium, like we talked about, 1,500 extra of that. Also, folic acid is real important for protection of breast cancer, and
what
you should take 400 folic acid.
Folic acid,
and then you should,
yes.
And then also another real important one is the fish oil. And that helps with decreased breast cancer, hot flashes, and helps the vagina, helps your skin. But taking a level, that's another thing. Let me get back to that. Taking a level by the saliva or blood, if you look on that days of the week that's in my book, on W Wednesday and W Thursday, the estrogen is fluctuating on a daily, weekly, hourly basis, so high, so low, that you cannot tell your level. It would be a waste of your money to get that lab, because it could be, you could be catching it at the too high level, the medium level, or the too low level, and you're not sure where that person is really running all day long. So that's why symptoms is more reliable.
So when we go into this perimenopausal period, it's partly because our ovaries are not working in the same way that they were before, and our hormone levels are beginning to fluctuate, as you say, even in the course of a day. Tell us more about that.
Well, yes, during that time, what's happening is you used to ovulate every single month, and that monthly ovulation would put off progesterone, which would therefore, in the end, control your cycle and give you an appropriate cycle. And when you're in the perimenopause, you started to get really low on your good eggs anymore. And so, therefore, you don't ovulate and you don't always have your normal regulation of your cycle anymore.
Mm. Now, one of the things that I thought was very interesting in here, there's so many interesting things, I shouldn't say that, but one of the things that comes up a lot in our disease community, where people are dealing with chronic pain or they've had an operation and everything, and all of a sudden it's not as much fun to have sex anymore. Some of the things that you point out in here, I hear from people who are also dealing with chronic pain, and I hadn't realized the interrelationship between, yes, part of it is due to the medical condition, but part of it may be because of these perimenopausal symptoms, and we didn't realize that we had both things going on at the same time. Or it could be that the medications are promoting or aggravating the perimenopausal symptoms. Sounds like we've got both things going on at the same time.
Yes, and the same treatments work for both. And for instance, I had last week two different patients, one with fibromyalgia and another one with a neuropathy in the end of her fingers. And both have been extremely bothered more excessively in the past months, one girl, in the past 3 months, the other girl. And I put her on the Womanopause Challenge and started estrogen on both of them in the natural form that's either by skin, by spray on your arm called Evamist, or a patch that you wear on your tummy called Vibil Dot, or gel that you wear on your leg called Divigel. And those are ways that you can take your body identical estrogen, which is 17 beta estradiol. It's not mixed with horse estrogens. It's not mixed with pregnancy estrogens that some of the others do. It's just the one plain estrogen. And then you give them the natural progesterone also that's in a peanut oil. And in a month, they both came back and they feel like new people, because it also treats their disease, because they're the same things that treat menopause also treats chronic diseases like that.
Right, so it can soothe the nerves as well as targeting these perimenopausal symptoms. Is that right?
Right, and that's because there's estrogen receptors in every place in our body. So, for instance, we have estrogen receptors in our joints, and we start getting some arthritis, but if you go on estrogen, the arthritis will often disappear or at least get a lot better.
Fascinating. Now, there's been a lot of negative press about estrogen therapy, hormone replacement therapy, and so forth. So tell us the differences between the estrogen therapy that's gotten bad press and what you're recommending in terms of this body identical estrogen.
Yes. The body identical is FDA approved, so it's not compounded. It's monitored and regulated, and we know exactly what we're getting. And it is made the same way as the bioidentical. They're both synthesized in a lab in Germany, but the bioidentical mixes other estrogens in it too, like estriol, which is one you'd have for pregnancy, and also the progesterone by skin that they give. It's not absorbed into the body as progesterone, so you don't see it that way. WHI was a study that was put out in 2002 and did a very disservice to women because they all stopped their estrogen. And it was done with oral estrogen, which has a little bit higher risk in thromboembolism, and it also decreases your sexual desire to a certain degree. What they didn't put out in the news was that they coupled it with progestogen, which is not your natural progesterone, and it actually increased the diagnosis of breast cancer slightly, but not statistically significant, which didn't come out in the news well that way either. But the girls who were just on estrogen alone, even though it was an oral estrogen, which we don't use today, they still had a 33% decrease in breast cancer, but they didn't mention that on the news because it's not scary. It's good news. I'm not sure why.
So they focused
it's hard
on
for me
the scary parts, even though they were, as you say, not statistically significant, but they left out the important part that was actually good news.
Right. And so now today, when you use the body identical that I'm talking about, the skin ones, they actually have a slight decrease in thromboembolism instead of the 4 times increase. So it's a huge difference. And they also improve sexual desire rather than decrease sexual desire. So the things that were negative before have disappeared. So it turns out that actually if you use estrogen, that you have a decreased chance of heart disease, 40%. You have a decreased chance of mortality for any cause. That's including breast cancer, heart disease, everything under the sun. You have a decreased chance of 40% of dying from anything if you start it during the window of opportunity. So the window of opportunity is that age period of menopause plus or minus 10 years. So if you started it for the first time when you're 80, you actually have an increased risk of a cardiovascular event during the first year, because it's treating the vessels that have already diseased. But past a year, then the risk goes back down. But if you start it between the age of 40 and 60, then you actually decrease that. And if you stay on it for at least 10 years, you'll decrease dementia actually by 80%.
Decrease dementia by 80%? Wow.
Yes.
That, That's very, very significant. Now, yes. Help us understand the difference between compounded estrogen and this body identical estrogen, because these were new terms that a lot of people may not know.
That's true. And that's part of what I was discussing when we lost you on the line. But bioidentical is a term that is a marketing term, and it is a mixture of estrogens that include pregnancy estrogen, which has been tested in studies. So it's not as tested and true, but it's similar in the fact that they are both estrogen and both will decrease these problems that I've been talking about. But the bioidentical is not monitored. The body identical, FDA approved, is monitored. And the bioidentical uses progesterone by skin, and that's not absorbed well. You need to take it through a peanut oil. That's the only way available today that you can absorb it effectively to protect your uterus from your cancer. And both of them are synthesized in the same lab in Germany. And that's one thing that got a bad mark on it, was the fact that bioidentical tried to say that they were more natural because they weren't synthesized, but they are synthesized. They're synthesized from plant parts just like the FDA-approved ones.
Okay, so we have three terms here. One is compounded, and that is entirely made in the lab. That's really all synthetic?
That's all synthetic, and it's the same as bioidentical. Compounded and bioidentical are similar terms.
Oh, okay. So they're essentially synonyms, not quite, but
yes.
Almost. Okay,
yeah,
and then the body identical is the one that is put together in a way that is more like what we actually create inside our bodies.
It is made of just one estrogen, 17-beta-estradiol, which is our active estrogen that's always been in our bodies, and it has only one estrogen. It doesn't mix in pregnancy estrogens with it.
And then you said that there is some mixture with other elements that we need in order to protect ourselves from any negative. So there's some progesterone that we need to take with it and possibly even some androgen?
Yes, some people will take all three depending on their symptoms. But if you don't have a uterus, you only need to take estrogen. You do not need to couple it with progesterone. If you do have a uterus, you need to couple it with progesterone to protect the uterus from cancer. Then testosterone can be added, especially in women who don't have their ovaries. They've lost half of their testosterone if they've lost their ovaries, and they may be more wanting to replace their testosterone. But other postmenopausal women, at menopause, what happens with the testosterone? It's gradually been going down since they were 30, and it's slightly down at menopause, and then estrogen can go above it or below it, and it kind of confuses the body, and 40% have less desire, 40% have the same desire they always had for sex, and then there's 20%, because of how the balance works out, that actually have an increased desire. But those who
right,
have a decreased desire...
In the book, you spell this out a lot more, so we don't need to go into all the detail, but just to let people know that women have a certain amount of testosterone in their bodies all along, and that's something that I didn't realize either, that we need it for, what did you say, vitality and also for sex drive.
Sex drive, and it also improves orgasm, and then just sense of well-being. It increases that also.
So, right, we don't have as much as men. We have, what, less than 10% of what men have, but we do need that little bit just to give us a little pizzazz.
Yes, that's true. Now, the testosterone is in phase 3 trials right now to be out in our country. Right now, it's only out in men's doses. It's in every other country, they have it in women's doses, but they don't have it here. But we can easily extrapolate from the men's dose and give the woman the proper dose that they're giving in the other countries, but that would be considered off-label.
Right, so it's those ovaries that are creating not just the estrogen, but also testosterone and other hormones that we need. And if we have had those ovaries removed, or if they've atrophied over time in the normal course of things, then some replacement may be needed to keep our mood up and our energy up and such. Is that more or less right?
Yes, that is right. And it goes down 50%. Even if you're postmenopausal and your ovaries aren't functioning anymore, they are still secreting testosterone. So if you lose your ovaries, then you lose 50% of your testosterone. The rest of it comes from conversion of estrogen in the body and also from your adrenals.
Okay.
But
fascinating.
This
was such a revelation to me in the way these hormones are generated, how they fluctuate over time and how they interact and how they influence how we feel, how we operate, all the various functions of our bodies. Really fascinating how much impact the female reproductive tract has on almost every aspect of our being.
Right. And I think that the sex problem is often not the testosterone at menopause because it hasn't sharply changed then. It's more often the problem of the vagina Sahara, with the vaginal dryness. And women don't know that that's 100% treatable.
Right. I mean, so many women think that, well, that's just the way it goes and, we'll just have to live with this reduction in moisture in the vagina. And it can be very painful. It can make you really turned off about having sex altogether, which then impacts your relationship with your partner. So it would be much nicer if we were able to sustain it. And some people do sustain it. I remember when Adele Davis's husband died, she was on Johnny Carson. She was a big nutrition expert in the 60s. And she was an older woman. She was in her 90s, and her 95-year-old husband had just passed away. And Johnny Carson turned to her, and he said, "What is it you miss most about your husband?" And she said, without missing a beat, she said, "I miss the sex."
Yes, exactly.
So I thought, how wonderful that a 95-year-old lady can say that about her relationship. I mean, I hope we all will be able to say that in our 90s.
Yes, and the more sex you have, the more sex you want. So it actually treats itself, besides the fact that you can use every morning a woman should just naturally, when she gets up, washes, she should put on some mineral oil. And just like you put your lotion on your arms and your legs, your vagina needs its moisture too. And then if that becomes not enough, then you can use estrogen cream that's local there. It doesn't affect the rest of the body. So even girls with breast cancer can use that. And then you can also, the central estrogen will also work too, but a lot of people need the local estrogen. It actually repairs the vagina. Vaginas that have atrophied, become thin, where you have tears easily, bruises easily, or they've lost their labia, you put the estrogen on it on a regular basis, and it will grow the labia back. It will put the vagina back. It will bring the blood vessels back.
Amazing. So it'll repair itself. Even you gave some examples in the book of women who had significant repair even in the first few weeks.
Oh, definitely. Yes, within 4 weeks. That's why I have that 4-week thing on the front of the book, because it's significantly better in every area in 4 weeks.
So the bottom line message is, don't lose hope. There is action to be taken, and as you say, you've got a program called the Women of Pause Challenge that's laid out in the book. And are there other physicians, are they mostly gynecologists, who would be able to help people with these kinds of issues? Where do you find a friendly physician who will actually take you seriously when you raise issues like this?
Well, go to the NAMS website. Or
NAMS?
That's North American Menopause Society. Or if you go to our website, it will hook you up with them, womanofpausebook.com. And they will have practitioners that have been board certified. Those initials behind my name, the NAMS initials, it's NAMS Certified Menopause Practitioner. And you can find one that's closest to you.
Okay, so NAMS, which stands for the North American Menopause Society, and you can probably best start at menopausebook.com, which will take you to the information about Dr. and Dr. Miller's book here, which Lavera Miller has written with her husband, David Miller. And it's, again, called Women O Pause, Feeling Fit, Feminine, and Fabulous in 4 weeks, and it's on Amazon, and it's in ebook form. I can tell you because I downloaded the ebook. So it's really great. And I, one of the things I discovered I really like about my ebook, my Kindle reader, is that it's like books in a plain brown wrapper. Nobody knows what I'm reading.
That's true. So nobody knows. You can read anything you want.
So if you don't want to ride the trolley with a book called Womenopause blaring itself across the aisle, then put it on your Kindle.
That's right. Yeah. Another important part that we really haven't discussed much is the mood, because there's such labile moods in the perimenopause and menopause time. 75% of women will actually experience it enough to want treatment, and 20% would even fall into the depressed area. And it's so treatable, and like we said, exercise is real important to it. Your vitamins are real important to it. Estrogen treats it as well as an antidepressant does. And you can even use an antidepressant and estrogen together and get even more relief. So it's a part that I think is, it's made people alienate from their family, and they can go back to their family. Their family likes having them back.
You gave a wonderful example of a woman who thought she was doing fine, you know, but then did some estrogen therapy with you, and her family threw her a welcome back party.
Yes, exactly.
That was great. It's so true. Even if we think we're doing okay, we may be a little bit more, you know, brittle towards those we love than we really ought to be.
Yeah, exactly. And then also there's a chapter on menopause.
Yes, tell us about that.
Well, men aren't as fortunate. They don't have a uterus that gives them the sign of where they are in their life. Our uterus is our little teller, tells us the news. But with men, their testosterone also slowly starts going down in their 30s. And by age 50, 50% notice a decrease in it. And there's nothing to tell them that that's what's going on. They just start having maybe more aches and pains. They're just not, they're more tired. They don't have that pizzazz that they used to have. They're having troubles with erections. And they're subtle little things, and they think, oh, they're just getting old. But they might want to go get their testosterone checked, because it does slowly, slowly go down over time, and at a point becomes significant for them.
One of the things we noticed in VHL was about 10 years ago, we said, oh, my goodness, we have a menopause problem, because there was a resurgence of tumor activity with the hormone shift. And then we said to ourselves, hooray, we have a menopause problem, because before that time, women were dying in their 30s and 40s. And so we're living longer and having more of these aging issues. And that's not only true for women, it's also true for men. And we've noticed that there's that hormone shift and that resurgence of tumor activity in men as well in the 40-50 range. So have you noticed any coordinations with other medical conditions where this hormone shift actually is something that people need to watch out for medical reasons?
Well, right, it's true. And it's just like when your thyroid goes down, you have all these general vague symptoms. But we're used to that. We've dealt with that for years. People always lived with low thyroids, and we've had to treat that from the beginning. But this is a new problem. And another thing I wanted to point out, like you said, the emergence of tumors at this time. Men have 40% prostate cancer deaths, just the same, 40,000 die per year, just the same as with women, 40,000 die per year for breast cancer. They're exactly the same statistics, which is an interesting fact, because people worry about the breast cancer, and you don't hear about the prostate the same.
Uh-huh. Interesting. So for men, too, there are hormone shifts here that they should be conscious of and not embarrassed to go and seek assistance for, and hopefully they're getting taken seriously by their physicians as well. So if men are suspecting they have a problem, they should see who, a urologist?
Urologist would be great, yes. That's a very good idea.
Okay.
Their family doctor can also help them with that.
Okay. The other wonderful discussion you had was on eating real food and not fake food. So tell us about what is real food as opposed to fake food. And you know, I should say that you stress in the book that you don't believe in dieting, that dieting doesn't work. I absolutely agree with that. But somehow we have to learn to eat right. We've forgotten how to do that.
That's right, because if diets work, we'd all be skinny. And America just took over being the number one fattest country in the world. We are now have now surpassed Mexico. So, yes, we need to go back to how our grandparents used to live when they ate real food. They ate the food of the earth, the food that's on the periphery of the grocery store, not the fast food, fake food, junk food. Food that you can eat while you're walking or driving in a car, that's not the real food. You want to eat the real food, the real meals that we used to eat. Those people, you can look at one of our favorite pictures is at our Meyer's store. There's a big picture of back 100 years ago, and there were maybe 30 men out there working, and none of them were overweight. None of them. And now where could you find 30 men and look at them all, and there'd be none overweight?
Right. I think another statistic that I heard was that 100 years ago, something like 3 or 4% of America was considered overweight. And today it's, what, 60%? It's something outrageously high like that.
Right. And so, and today 40% at age 60 will have metabolic syndrome from being overweight. And that brings in a whole bunch of things like it increases death by 30%. It increases breast cancer. It increases any kind of medical problem that you can think of, hypertension, blood, diabetes. And only 10% have it 20 years old, but 40% by 60. And it's increased 600% more if you smoke or 400% increase in cardiovascular disease if you have it.
So being overweight is not good for you. But on the other hand, you shouldn't panic and do stupid things. Like sometimes people have told me that they went to the doctor and the doctor says, oh, you're terribly overweight. We ought to talk about bariatric surgery. Now, wait a minute, gang. And I liked your approach much better. So number one, you start to eat real food and not fake food, like giving up soda pop or other things like that. You say, because you had a really good turn of phrase in the book.
Well, one thing that we promote is a fast for fit, and that the four means also the number four. And there's four things. If you're really wanting to lose weight around the middle, avoid bread, avoid potatoes, avoid sugared drinks, and wear a pedometer and get 15,000 steps a day. 15,000, you reduce weight. 10,000 is for maintaining weight.
So, okay, so that's four steps. So that most of us can remember four things. I think I can probably handle that. Okay, so avoid all the bread stuff, whether it's whole grain or not, it's bread, and to be avoided. It's that right? Or is there any such thing as a good bread?
There are better breads than other breads, of course. But what I'm saying is if you want to lose the middle, that middle weight around the belly, that's the dangerous weight, is right there in the tummy. And if you want to lose that specifically, just go off bread and potatoes and sweet drinks just until you're at the size you want to be again. And you want to be ideally right at the belly button. If you took a tape measure around there, if you're over 35, you're in dangerous weight for health reasons. And if you're less than 35, you're not in dangerous health reasons for losing weight.
So if your
weight
is more than 35 inches, then you need to take some action here. And
yes.
And again, no stupid diets, please. But this is one that almost anybody can live with. During the time that you want to lose some weight, give up bread, give up potatoes, and mostly, as I recall your discussion, that's mostly because of all the stuff we put on potatoes, right? There's a certain amount, I mean, potatoes are starchy foods anyway, but then they don't taste right unless you put butter on them or you deep fry them or you add sour cream and cheese and all the other good stuff. So if we just don't eat the potatoes, then we're also not eating the decorations.
Yes. I recently read a study on that if you eat the fresh vegetables and the fresh fruits, you actually decrease your chances of breast cancer again, and they're so good for you. And you're not going to gain any weight on those. You can eat as much as you want. You know, if you eat too many fruits, of course, it is high in sugar. So you want to, you know, be careful, but mostly you can eat as much as you want.
And a lot of these things are kind of self-limiting because they do have fiber in them. They're filling you up, and they're not creating a dependence. I mean, the sweetened things and the things with the corn syrup in it are actually addictive. The more you eat of them, the more you want to eat them.
That's
Whereas
true.
With fresh fruits and vegetables, they'll fill you up.
Right. Right. And another good rule of thumb, too, and I think that America's gotten away from this, especially at the restaurants, is a food size serving that you should eat is the size of your fist. And we're getting to this idea of eating a whole plate size of serving.
Mounded plate.
Mounded plate. That's a good point.
A lot of the restaurants give you more food on purpose because they want you to feel better about paying the bill. You know, take it home in a doggy bag. But we lose sight, as you say, of what's a rational portion here.
Right. And bigger people can eat more. So that's why the fist is a good rule of thumb, because your fist is usually proportionate to your size.
Right, right. So a big basketball player and a small child have obviously different size fists. The other thing on your list is sugary drinks. And so, as a matter of fact, my son gave up soda pop not too long ago. And 2 months later, he went to the doctor and discovered to his surprise that he had lost 16 pounds. He never even tried to lose weight and just, what do you know?
Exactly. That's why he didn't really go on a diet, but he quit empty calories. He quit empty calories.
Right. We forget how much empty calorie there are. And even though sometimes we use the, what do they call it, the diet sodas. So, but diet sodas are not really non-problematic. Instead of taking Coca-Cola or whatever your favorite brand is and subtracting, you know, we'll take out the caffeine and we'll take out the sugar and all that. But, of course, replace those with chemicals. It would be much better if you start with water and have a orange juice or, you know, something to add a little flavor if you want to. But you don't have to add sugar and you don't have to add other gratuitous chemicals.
In fact, take that water and add ice to it, because then you burn energy just melting the ice down when you drink. And you will actually lose weight from drinking a glass of water. Plus, it fills you up. So drink that glass of water before you eat.
Very good. And then a pedometer is something that measures your paces. And ped means foot. And so every time you take a step, it's counting for you. And you usually hang them off your waistband or something. I seem to recall you had one brand that you particularly liked because you said it had a nice profile or something.
Well, I use the Sportline one only because it's small and flat, and I can wear it in my bra, and I don't have to worry, because most dresses for girls or different clothes, it's hard to find a place to put it. So you can just stick it in the lower part of your bra, and it's real flat and very small.
Oh, that's a clever idea, put it in your bra, because, often if you're wearing a dress, there may not be a waistband to it, or certainly not a pocket.
And it can easily fall into the toilet or other places if you wear it in your waistband, too. So it doesn't really fall anywhere in your bra.
Very good. Okay. So, yes, it would be good if we put some attention on losing weight in a sensible manner and over time. So to lose no more than about 1 to 2 pounds a week, something like that, is a good target.
Yes, it's not how fast you lose it; it's that you keep on losing it. If you're trying to lose it, you keep on going. It can even be a half a pound a week, but pretty soon it's 10 pounds if you keep going. You have to go until you get to your goal. Set your goal. Look at a BMI sheet. I've got one in the book, and you easily can find your BMI. You go across from your weight and match up where your height is, and you see your BMI, and you can watch your BMI go down, and you can have certain goals along the way. Makes it a nice way.
Right. So this is a very sensible weight loss plan. No stupid diets, no crash diets. You didn't get into this shape overnight, and you're not going to get out of it overnight. But yes, it is advantageous. As you say, what, losing 20 pounds reduces your risk of breast cancer by 20%?
Exactly. And that's how easy. I mean, okay, it's hard, but it's doable. Everything worthwhile is hard, but it's doable. It's not something you're stuck with. You can do lots of different things to decrease your chances of breast cancer, and instead of sit and worry about whether you're going to get it.
Right, and I think the other thing I liked in your description about it was, you know, have dinner with your family and make cooking a family affair and cleaning up a family affair. I mean, it's not a good idea to get into the habit of sort of being the short order chef and then letting people go off and watch TV while they're eating. Much better to focus on your food and make it a social experience that everybody can enjoy.
Yes, we need more family time in our lives. We need that interaction, the talking. We grow up and not know each other. And evening meals are a wonderful way to share some time. Cleaning and cooking, too.
Yes. Well, this has been delightful. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Lavera Miller. And the book is Womenopause. Is there anything else that you'd particularly like to leave with our listeners before we sign off?
Just to know that there are simple, safe solutions for all of your symptoms. You may have only one symptom, or you might have all of them, but they're all very treatable, and you can make a difference in 4 weeks. And I just would like to empower women to know that they can make a difference.
Great. So please do pick up a copy of Womenopause and read it. As Dr. Miller says, you can make a huge difference in 4 weeks. If you don't believe it, you've got to read some of the stories that she has in there from many of her patients that I think will empower you, will help you see that there is something that can be done for your various symptoms. And even if you have a serious medical condition, and maybe I should say, especially if you have a medical condition that you're dealing with alongside these symptoms, to get some relief from this end of the business, you may very well find that it has a positive impact on what you might have been attributing also to your medical condition. Because for one thing, Dr. Miller, you mentioned that for chronic pain, for example, that once you deal with the estrogen levels, it can actually take some of the anxiety away and potentially impact the pain level.
Definitely.
Definitely. Okay, well, thank you so much, Dr. Miller, and thank you, everybody, for being with us. And I got all wrapped up in the conversation and forgot to turn on the chat line. So I hope we have answered the questions that women had out there. And if not, please send me email to questions@powerfulpatient.org. And the recording for this show will be on powerfulpatient.org. And we look forward to having you with us next week as well. And meanwhile, everybody, be well and be a powerful patient. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.